Dear congregation, the theme for the sermon tonight is Thou Shalt Not Kill. Thou Shalt Not Kill. 3 points. First, love and kill. The opposites to Paul's. Love and kill. Second, kill and refuge. There is a refuge for people who kill others. And thirdly, the commandment applied. Thou shalt not kill, that's the theme. First, love and kill as two opposites. Second, kill and refuge. And third, the commandment applied. So first, love and kill. Well, it's tonight about the sixth commandment. Thou shalt not kill. And we all know that we are dealing with that second table of the Ten Commandments, the holy law of God. And what's the summary of that second table? Even the young people among us, they know that. Well, the summary of that second table is love thy neighbor as thyself. Well, when we let that sink in, that the summary of the table is the second table. Love thy neighbor as thyself. And that the commandment for tonight, the commandment we consider is thou shalt not kill. And we realize that we are dealing with two opposite poles, two really complete opposites. At one hand, it is about love, how it should be. At the other hand, it is about killing, how it, of course, should not be. To love and to kill. They are inconceivable. They are really totally different things, totally opposite. They are really two poles, as far from each other as north from south and east from west. There is a world of difference, an infinite space between loving and killing. Thou shalt not kill. To kill is to take the life of somebody, right? To take somebody else's life. Is there a greater evil than to take someone's life? It's the ultimate evil, right? Is there a greater evil than taking someone's life? You cannot go further in evil against your neighbor. It's such an opposite from to love your neighbor. To kill your neighbor is the complete opposite. To remove another from life forever. You can't undo it. That's impossible. It is to remove someone from your reality. The reality you live in. The world around you. You just remove that other one. You can't undo it. You push another one so far away that other one no longer exists in the circle of life. What an evil it is. To kill is that it begins there. That you don't want to see that other anymore. I don't want to see that person. And you push that other person out your reality, out your circle of life. That's where killing begins. You like to put an infinite distance between you and your neighbor. Instead of embracing the other one in love. It's an evil that cannot be removed. It cannot be undone. Everything else, all other evil done against your neighbor, You can still do something about it. You can try to undo it. For example, if the other person still lives, well, you can visit that other person. You can confess your evil. You can wash the feet of your neighbor. You can show in word and deed that you would like to undo the evil you did toward that person. You can say sorry. You can still turn evil into good, into love. But after you have killed someone, all of that is impossible. You can't undo it. It's indeed the ultimate evil because you crossed a line. You can't go back. You put an infinite distance between you and the other one. And you can never again bridge that gap. An infinite distance. And at the other hand, tonight it is about love thy neighbor as thyself. The complete opposite of killing. What does love do? It turns toward the other. Even if that other is an enemy, it doesn't matter. Love turns toward the other. It sees the other as a person of flesh and blood, as we are persons of flesh and blood. It seeks the other. And if necessary, you're even willing to wash the feet of the other and to sacrifice yourself. Love seeks the other and wants to promote the life of the other. Love forgives. It forgives everything your neighbor did in evil against you. Love is patient with the other. Even if the other provokes you, but you're patient. Love draws the other into your circle of life. You're going to share your life with the other one. Love, in the end, is closeness. And killing is an infinite distance. They are such complete opposites. They differ like day and night. Day and night. These two, to love and to kill, darkness and light, they will never understand each other. They can't. It's just impossible. Why? Love finds its origin in God. He is the source of life and love. He is the one who wants to draw even dead people and sinners in his circle of life and love. And he goes as far as sacrificing his son, right? Entering the circle of our death. That's love. God is only light, only love. Killing, where does killing find its origin? In Satan. He is the killer of the human being from the very beginning. He is only darkness. Satan and God are so far removed from each other as north and south. And so are love and killing. So far removed. There are like two kingdoms. And they're always in war. Two kings in war. Two types of citizens. Two types of life. Well, we all see and recognize the killing around us, right? There are wars. There is a terrible war going on and dragging on for a year now, I think, in the Ukraine. How many lives are taken? And there are so many wars. There are shootings, there is abortion, there is euthanasia. We can go on and go on and go on. There is so much killing. But after having understand at least a little bit what killing is, that killing starts with pushing the other way out of the circle of your life, we all understand that even a true believer, true Christian, may be one who kills. And that's a terrible thought. That we allow that darkness and the prince of darkness to enter our reborn lives. That heart which is supposed to be filled with light. And the prince of light, Jesus. And we allow the prince of darkness to come in and we push the other away. And we can do so with our thoughts. I never want to see him or her again. It's being angry with someone. It's envy. All of that. Or words or gestures. It all starts there. Well, this commandment really places us in the midst of everyday life. Let's be honest. It places us in that battle. That battle between flesh and spirit. And I hope and I pray that you are not a stranger of that battle. That you know about that battle. And that you wrestle with that enemy there. Because that enemy outside is so subtly becomes an enemy inside. And you start wrestling with it. It is a battle that is waged within us during our lives. It is noteworthy that the first sin we read in the Bible after the fall is indeed this sin, the sin of killing. Therefore, we have read Genesis 4. We all know that story by heart. Adam and Eve, driven out of paradise. There is no way back. Darkness entered light. There's no way back anymore from our side. Angels are there with fiery swords. And they obstruct the way back to paradise and to the tree of life, to the garden of love and light and life. Adam and Eve became strangers in a land of darkness. They came out of light, but they were driven out because of their sin, and now they live in darkness. Oh, there is still God's grace, common grace surrounding them. Oh, there is. But their sphere of life is the sphere of darkness, the sphere of Satan and his kingdom, the prince of darkness. That's where they live, strangers. In a strange land, far from home, far removed from life, light, and love. But God never lets go. Works of his hands, never. What he begins, he will end. He will end. And therefore, he grants love. He grants life. Two children are born, Cain and Abel, a gift of love. But the prince of darkness rules. And he will take life through the hands of Cain. Life given, love. Life taken, darkness, death, killing. Love and hate. Two poles, two opposites. There is love between Adam and Eve, that gift of common grace. They embrace each other. And as a gift out of that love flows life. Children are born. Common grace. Cain and Abel. And there is love from God. He bestows a blessing for the time in the love there is between Adam and Eve and the birth of these two children. Common grace. Love. Even for Adam, living in that land of darkness, driven out of paradise. But still, there is God's love in fighting them
to come to him. It is his hand. Come to me.
The Lord also in his grace and love warns Cain. When his countenance fell, that expression means that he became angry with his brother. Their wrath starts, hatred starts. It takes root in his heart. Hatred, envy, anger. His countenance fell, and the Lord warns. There is that love. If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. The Lord does not let go the works of his hands. He seeks man and he knocks at the door of that man and he says, seek me and live, even if in his warning to Cain, seek me. Look unto me, all ye ends of the world, and be ye saved. Isaiah 45. But we see that hatred in Cain. Oh, indeed, there is that love from God. There is that love between Adam and Eve. There is that gift of love to children. But on the other hand, there is this hatred. Cain, he turns away from his parents. He pushes them out of his reality, sphere of life. He doesn't need any more their love in word and deed. He turns away from his brother. He pushes his brother away. Envy takes root in his heart. And in the end, that's even worse. He turns away from God. He does not listen to God and God's warning, God's love. Cain, in the end, turns out a man focused on himself. Focused on himself. He sees only one thing, himself, his pleasure, his lusts. That's it. And everything else is pushed out of his sphere of life, the reality of his life. And that's where killing begins. It all begins with that envy, pushing other people away out of your life. Pushing God away in his love. Pushing your parents away. Pushing your sibling away. Noteworthy is also verse 8. We have read verse 8, right? We read there. And Cain talked with Abel, his brother. But it's remarkable that nothing, really nothing at all, is said about the content of that talking. So we really wonder, was there talking at all? It says Cain talked. Well, indeed, there were words. But was there real talking? Did Cain see his brother? Did Cain allow Abel to enter his life? Did Cain seek his brother? No word about the content of his talk. Immediately after the talk, there was the killing. Was there any speaking at all? No. There were words, but they were empty words. Words in vain. There was a speaking. But in that speaking, Cain was turned away from his brother. He didn't see him. He didn't allow him to enter his life and his heart and his mind and his soul. He didn't love him at all. He loved himself. He was focused on himself. And killing begins there, when you don't see the other anymore. You no longer have a conversation. Do you recognize it in your life? There are probably people you don't like to speak to. Well, there, killing begins. Killing begins there where there is silence. Although there may be words, many words. But if you consider these words, there is silence. It's all about yourself. And God sees everything. Nothing is hidden from him. Nothing. Where is Abel, thy brother? Cain,
Where's Abel, thy brother? Oh, how disconcerting his answer is. Am I my brother's keeper? I don't know who he is. He's out of my circle of life. I pushed him away. Am I my brother's keeper? He's so focused on himself. There's no love anymore. He doesn't see him. He no longer exists for him. And so it came to manslaughter. You see, that manslaughter really starts here, in our mind, in our heart, with not loving the other one, with not allowing the other one to enter my circle of life, with pushing the other away. That's where killing begins. That's what the Lord tells us in Matthew 5. We are all guilty of manslaughter, all of us. We are so used, right, to speak about them who do abortion. All these evildoers. We are evil. We even push our brothers and sisters out of our existence. Here's where killing starts. And then God pronounces that curse on Cain. But still, even after pronouncing that curse, just pay attention that God is patient because that penalty of death is not yet, right, fulfilled. Right? Cain is still alive. There's still that possibility of a return to God. And God still reaches out to Cain with his love, that invitation. Let me allow you to enter the sphere of your life. Well, it is remarkable that the first sin after paradise is the sin of manslaughter. And in all its sharpness, it shows us what is going on. We have allowed the prince of darkness, the murderer of man from the beginning, to enter our life. And his influence is so great. How great is the consequences of our sin? How great is the evil we do? But even from the very beginning, God shows himself to be so consistent in being the God of life, being the God of love. He is above all of this. And he seeks man and seeks our salvation. He even sought the salvation of Cain. Well, in Genesis 4, the depth of our evil is proven and showed to us. And in contrast, we see the greatness of God's love. Let's move on to the second thought. Killing and refuse. Let's take a step further. And let's start with the text of the commandment itself. It says in that commandment, it's a short commandment, thou shalt not kill. Well, this text, these words need an explanation. Because there are many different types of killing. Right? Killing can be consciously. But it also may be unconsciously. Killing can be premeditated, or it may be accidentally, or even in ignorance. And all of that, that's what we understand, right? Makes a difference, a huge difference. Well, in fact, in the Hebrew language, many words are used for killing. And the word used here for killing in this commandment is used 46 times in the Hebrew writings in the Old Testament. That's not that much. Only 46 times. But we could render that word as unlawful killing. So in other words, it says in that commandment, thou shalt not kill unlawfully. There is a lawful killing, but thou shalt not kill unlawfully. So it's about killing against God's commandment, against His love, against His will. That's because one could kill, by example, on a court order. And we know that a government may use the sword. The government may indeed take life in a righteous way. So there may be a court order to take life. Or there is the inevitable killing in a just or righteous war. There are righteous wars. And there may be a killing in such a war. Well, death killing is not condemned here. It is about unlawful, unrighteous killing. It deals with such things as, let me give you a list. First of all, murder. Of course, murder. Premeditated, deliberately taking someone's life. Premeditated, deliberately, consciously, murder. Well, that's clear. It also speaks about manslaughter. Killing another one intentionally, but without premeditation. Still intentionally, but there was no premeditation. By example, in a fit of rage. The third thing here it speaks about is culpable homicide. Homicide. Killing another one, and it comes closer and closer because of carelessness, of reckless action. Now it comes close, right? What about our reckless driving? About our reckless speed? It comes closer and closer. Well, all these cases are covered by this commandment. And even the next case is covered in this commandment. Killing without fault, but still unlawful. And the Bible gives some clear examples about that. Killing without fault. By example, Deuteronomy 19. Someone swings an axe to hew down a tree. But by hewing down the tree and swinging that axe, the blade slips from the hand and fatally strikes another person, and that other person dies. And that killing too is condemned. Also that killing. God takes killing very seriously. All killing. Very seriously. Why? Why does God take killing so seriously? Right? Even that case from Deuteronomy 19. It happened accidentally. And still, why? Well, I give you several reasons. First of all, taking life always finds its origin in the sphere of the Prince of Darkness. He is the manslaughter from the very beginning. He is the murderer from the beginning. He just one thing. He wants our death from all of us. And killing begins with him. It comes from him. It finds its origin in him. And secondly, that's why God takes killing so seriously. Life is a precious gift from God's hand. He is the creator of life. He's the source of life. And everything what flows out of him, we can't end. He takes it seriously. And thirdly, man, even after the fall, is still an image bearer of God. Oh, I know. That image is shattered. I know it's shattered. But the traces of that image are still there. We are still, although a shattered image bearer, we are still an image bearer of God. And that's enough not to kill anyone. To kill one's neighbor is to go against God. Is against going against God's will. It's going against God's faithfulness. It's going against God's grace. Against His love. But maybe, perhaps,
you still have questions about that case from Deuteronomy 19, that blade, right? It hit your neighbor accidentally. You didn't do it on purpose, intentionally. Although that blade killed your neighbor, but in your eyes it was an accident. Why does God condemn even that killing? It wasn't your fault, is it? And at one hand, it is understandable. Because life comes from God. It is His gift. And life is taken here. Although it was accidentally, but life is taken here. So there is sin. At the other hand, you can't do anything about it. Right? There was no intent. There was no reckless behavior. And still, God condemns it. But there is more in the Old Testament. God is so gracious. So merciful. Time and again you see the word of God that God's justice and mercy come hand in hand. His righteousness is a condemning righteousness and it is a saving righteousness. One and the same righteousness. They come hand in hand as two sides of a coin. And also here, God has provided a way out in the Old Testament for them who are innocent of a death. You know that probably those who kill innocently were allowed to flee to a city of refuge. You see, at one hand, you have taken life. And that's seriously. But at the other hand, God is merciful. And there were in the Old Testament cities of refuge for these cases. The Lord has designated in the Old Testament six cities of refuge. There were in total 48 cities in Israel given to the Levites. Six out of these 48 cities given to the Levites were designated as cities of refuge. If you map them, and you see the map of Israel, and you see where these cities are located, you will find out that you never had to travel more than 35 miles. You had never to travel more than a day, 35 miles, to reach one of the cities of refuge. The special thing about these six cities, that all of them, without exception, were located on high ground. Clearly visible from every direction. Clearly visible. If someone killed, accidentally, through no fault of his own, then you were allowed to flee to such a city of refuge. And there you were safe. And it wasn't difficult to reach such a city. It was within that range of 35 miles. It was located on a high place. You could see that city from far. It was easy to see and to flee to. And there you were safe. At the hands of those who wanted to avenge that killing. In that city, that would be the next step. The elders would hear your case and they would judge your case. Well, if the verdict was innocent, then that individual could stay in that city. Until the high priest died, and then the fugitive went completely free. He was allowed to go back to his own city, where he was born, his place of birth. You see, God really stands up for the poor, for the miserable, for the oppressed. He shows himself here, although you have taken life. He shows himself so merciful and so gracious. But if the verdict of the elders was guilty,
Then the perpetrator was delivered in the hand of the avengers, the ones who sought vengeance. And they probably would take your life. Well, that's the city of refuge. What a beautiful picture. Well, before we apply all this truth, let us now sing first a psalter. And we'll sing Psalter 300, that's Psalm 109, and we'll sing the first three stanzas. Psalter 300, stanzas 1, 2, and 3. Commandment applied, the third thought. Well, the catechism outlines to us the broad content of this commandment. And it's easy to apply it to our own life and to our own time with words of the Heidelberg Catechism. It lines out and it draws out before us that there is that killing on global scale. Killing by terrorists. Environmental disasters with all their consequences. There are shootings. There is abortion. There is the euthanasia. And we can go on. Well, first of all, when we speak about abortion, we have to be very clear. Abortion, always, is homicide. And it's terrible to see that it's happening on such a large scale in particularly the Western countries. It is just a terrible sin. But at the other hand, although God condemns it, let us have compassion. Let us have love towards our neighbors, considering abortion. Let us act in love and mercy when we encounter parents considering abortion. They are often in great need. Let's just listen to them and wash their feet and be there for him and invite them in our sphere of life. Let's see them. Let's seek them. And at the other hand, be clear that abortion is a sin. Because life is a gift from God's hand. It's the same with euthanasia. It is in the end, killing and murder is forbidden. We read in Proverbs 37, verse 8 and 9. Open thy mouth for the dumb, in the cause of all such as are appointed to destruction. Open thy mouth, judge righteously, plead the cause of the poor and the needy. But we all know that's the other hand. And that because of our advanced medical science, we can stretch the boundaries so much that sometimes we face difficult decisions. And that's difficult. But euthanasia, of course, is wrong. But at the other hand, let's again act in mercy and compassion and listen to the need of the other. But so far, we ourselves are out of the picture, right? It's so easy to speak about the sin of the other, that sin on global scale. So easy to point with your finger to your neighbor. Most of you, I suppose, all of you, will not have killed someone. Not intentionally, and probably not even accidentally. And yet, no one, that's clear from the very beginning and the outset, no one goes free from this commandment. This commandment is so universal. Everyone, every person, every individual stands guilty here. No one is able to escape God's judgment. We all trespassed God's commandment, the sixth commandment, all of us. The Lord indicates this so clearly and with compassion in Sermon on the Mount. He penetrates there to the core of the sixth commandment. We have read it, Matthew 5. Ye have heard that it was said by them of all time, thou shalt not kill. Okay. Whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you, as the Son of God and the Messiah, whosoever is angry with his brother, who pushes him out of the sphere of your life, who doesn't